Tuesday, June 27th on the Ira Kaufman podcast as we march toward training camp. And Ira, before we talk about your fabulous presenters, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, let me say it's clear now to everybody that the train doesn't stop moving here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Last week, if you missed it, episode one, part one of Dirk Cutter joining the Ira Kaufman podcast. And of course, today is episode two. We got some great stuff from Dirk today, and you look good, Mr. Kaufman.
And plenty more to come, Steve. Plenty more. You know, we're 1 month away, basically, from training camp. It's moving fast. Better jump on that train, Mr. DeKemper. Fast.
1 month. All going to be sweating out there.
That's all right.
At least we have shade.
The pads are coming on, and the stick carriers are coming out, Mr. Isbitz. Correct?
August 5th, Saturday, training camp takeover day, where, of course, Bucks Uncensored host Justin Pawlowski, the commish, is rallying his troops, the stick carriers, a group that Dirk Cutter says he is fired up about and loves and seems to know intimately, know of them. Hear all of Dirk talking about that on our last podcast.
Can you imagine Pawlowski's reaction, Steve? Can you imagine, you have an image in your mind of what Pawlowski did when he heard that he was singled out by Coach Cutter and referenced as the commish? Can you imagine how that went over in the Pawlowski household?
Well, we don't have to imagine. It's on video. If you go to Justin's Twitter feed at Commish Online, Lee, when we played Justin the audio initially, Lee videotaped him, and we put it on Twitter. So his reaction is there. So you don't even have to imagine, Ari. You can go watch it. Get up to speed on Twitter, Kaufman.
He must have tied one on that night, Steve. Not that he needs a reason. I'm sure he was very pleased.
Well, we can talk about that. First, I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeKemper is who you're referencing. We're JoeBucksFan.com. Ira, Ed Morris, Cadillac, Tampa. This is the time of year. Every time of year is the time of year. But you know what? These tremendous June offers are nearing their close. At Ed Morris, Cadillac, Tampa, they're challenging other dealerships. And when they challenge other dealerships, you win by taking home the lowest prices. Don't miss the Ed Morris Summer Sales Challenge. Drive off in a powerful 2017 Escalade with zero down, only $689 a month. Let us impress you at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorriscadillactampa.com for all the details. See the dealer and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, Ira. Summer Sales Challenge is on there. They're challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest payments on a new Cadillac, like a 2017 ATS for only $369 a month, or a 2017 XT5 for just $399 a month. The Summer Sales Challenge is on. Visit edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. See Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon for all the details. Remember, the June offers, at the end of the month, they go away. So happy to say Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon present your Monday, Wednesday, and Friday columns.
I'm going through my closet right now, trying to decide my color patterns for what shirt I'm wearing for training camp, especially on August 5th. Black's out. You know, maybe in other years, black was the appropriate color for your local franchise. Not anymore. So it could be red, gray, white. Maybe we'll have a little poll. Maybe DeKemper will help me out. I'm colorblind. I don't know what's going on. I can't tell gray from red over there, really. I'm blind as a bat when it comes to colors. That's a beautiful yellow shirt you're wearing over there, DeKemper.
Are you serious? Are you yanking
a chain? No, I am colorblind. My whole family.
Wow.
We're not proud of it, but it happens, Steve.
That explains a lot. Ira, of course, you're talking about your Ed Morris gear fills your closet.
There's a Muriel Berkowitz one-liner in here.
Somewhere.
Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. They just make available Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter right here on JoeBucksFan.com. Now, Dirk, the good people.
Did you just call me Dirk?
I did call you Dirk.
You just call me Dirk? I don't want him to edit that out, DeKemper. I want him to keep it in there so people will realize how scatterbrained his bits can be.
Freudian slip. There we go. Freudian slip.
Just for that, I'm going to leave it, Ira. I'm going to leave it. No, I'm not going to edit that out. All right, look, we've got Dirk Cutter part two today of his interview. We're going to break this into probably four parts in case anybody's wondering. Our sit down with Dirk was about half an hour, and we hit on all kinds of topics. We're not going to go back to last week. Listen to that podcast if you missed it.
He didn't even end it, Steve. We said we got one more question around. We had more questions, but out of courtesy, Steve, we don't want to take too much of the man's time. But he didn't even cut off the interview. Steve, he looked like he might sit there for another 15 minutes. Unbelievable day.
If you are looking for the last podcast and you don't want to go to JoeBucksFan.com, it's right there on iTunes. Absolutely free. You can subscribe for an alert. Also on Podbean.com. check it out. And past episodes that we've done, Lee, Ira, and I have done all through the spring. A lot of great stuff and nuggets in there.
How's my Mexican contingent doing, Stephen? Holding strong at 10?
I have not checked in a little while. Ira, it'll be interesting when we get the numbers on the first Dirt Cutter episode, part one from last week. We'll see how many more Mexicans tuned in.
I'm holding out for Cameroon, DeKemper. I got my eye on Cameroon.
Well, here's one for you. You were trying to figure out small countries? This would be a feather in Mr. Kaufman's hat. Anybody from the Vatican listening?
I've never seen that pop up. So I've looked at them all before.
And it is a country.
You may continue, Steve.
All right. So today in our discussion with Dirk Cutter, we touched on a few topics, a few things, and Dirk went in a few directions. First, J.R. Sweezy, and then Dirk rolls into spending more or less time and on coaching and changing the managerial aspects of his job, as well as some other fun.
At what point, Dirk, I know in February when I spoke with you at the Combine, you had mentioned at that point Allie was going to move to center and J.R. Sweezy was going to be right guard. And apparently we know someone that scoped out Jameis and Allie a week or two before at one of these community football fields taking snaps with each other. At what point did you get comfortable enough with your information about Sweezy and his recovery that you like, hey, you know, we can bank on him being a starting right guard and we can move Allie to center?
I'm not sure exactly at what point that happened, but from the time Jason first brought Allie to us coming out of college and said, hey, let's start looking at this guy. I mean, all along, Jason, George Warhop, our old line coach, he was always projected as a guard center combo. When Allie first came his rookie year, we had two experienced centers and we still have those guys right now. And then obviously last year, one of our big free agent signings with J.R. Sweezy. Unfortunate situation, he couldn't play. And because JR couldn't play, Kevin Pamphile went from being a swing lineman to a full-time starter. Did pretty well. He did pretty well last year. So all of a sudden, when it looked like JR was gonna be back to full health, and he still hasn't practiced in pads, I know that, but looks like he's gonna be fine. Well, you got two big physical guys in Kevin Pamphile and JR. We said, well, how are we gonna get our best five? And you know, we love the way Joe Hawley plays the game. I loved him playing in Atlanta, I love him playing here. But Joe played last year most games below 280 pounds. And Joe's game is getting out in space and running, but we got overpowered a little bit in the middle of our line at 280. And we wanted to get bigger and we want to get our best five out there. Now, one team in the whole league last year had the same starting five the whole year with their own
line.
It was the Atlanta Falcons. So you have to have depth on top of that. So you, right now we're talking about getting our best five, but that's still always fluid. If something happens somewhere, we're gonna have to juggle it.
Dirk, you making any progress or do you care about streamlining some of your administrative duties in year two so you can do a little more hands-on coaching? I know that's something you want to do.
Yeah, everybody's been great about that. We're on the right track as far as the organization has allowed me to bring a couple extra guys in more of a quality control mode. We've worked very well together to make this thing fit. Everyone wants the same thing in our organization. Everybody's working towards the same goal. Yeah, I'm confident that we're on the right track. We got to do it. We got to back it up.
You miss a little of the hands-on last year? A little bit?
No, I didn't miss any coaching. Really, the only thing I miss is some of the meeting time. I like to be in that quarterback room when they're watching tape together. I like being in there. And I just have some other stuff that I couldn't be in there as much as I want. And it's ironic that you asked me that today, because in my journal this morning, sitting on my desk, I wrote down a note to myself, change this and change this so I can be at the quarterback film meeting every day in training camp. And it's just, I got to make it work.
Somebody leaked your journal to me. That's why.
Yeah, Coach, what would you charge to read the journal per minute? That would be fun. I'm still devastated that you referred to me as an old guy with these guys. I just ruined my whole summer. I got to hit the gym. Hey, that's not that fun. Okay, so Ira, interesting stuff there from Dirk. Let's get right to the offensive line. Lee asked him about Sweezy, and what I took away from that was, forget about Sweezy and all that. You can say whatever you want, Ira, but he specifically mentioned we need to get our two big physical guys into the lineup, and he mentioned Sweezy and Pamphile. He didn't even talk about Marpet. How did that strike you?
I thought the most interesting aspect was the juicy detail that the Bucs, quote, got overpowered, Lee, at the point of attack. And we who watched the Bucs play 16 times last year quickly realized there's no holes up the middle for this team. Jacquizz Rodgers had to make his own holes for the most part. averaging 4.1, which in the scheme of things was pretty darn good for the Bucks. But guys like Sims, Martin was running into a brick wall. Sims was going nowhere up the middle. I dare say, you know, when he says that, that Hawley was less than 280, he might have been 270. Lee, they got a 270-pound center. Now, let me say this up front, guys. If Marpet is equally effective at center as he was at right guard, then this move makes all the sense in the world.
That's a massive
upgrade.
But
it's still a big F if, Lee, you know, I dwell on this. Maybe I'm out of control here, but the fact that he has zero, and I mean zero, experience at center. I'm talking about high school, college. Zero, zero, zero. And I don't care what he did in OTAs, you know, a year and a half ago in a park. It's still a little bit of a gamble. But if it doesn't work, Lee, they go back, you know, and he goes back to right guard, I believe.
Really?
So we'll see what happens. But they think, and Steve, I think you're reading too much into it, which you are a master of, in terms of leaving Marpet out. Obviously, of course, Marpet's part of the big push, the big physical push in the middle between Pamphile and Sweezy. He didn't mention Marpet by name, but he mentions him enough to know that he's going to be the starting center this year. So they're looking for physicality up front. I don't think that's a bad thing, Lee.
Well, I know a lot of fans, they love Joe Hawley's, to use the vernacular of the day, his tood. He's got a great attitude. I mean, he's got a little edge to him. Fans love that. He was just overmatched as a center as far as his physical size.
Tood ain't going to slap Ndamukong Suh back about 3 yards. It only goes so far.
That's a good point. But correct me if I'm wrong. I could have swore I heard you say if Marpet initially struggles at center, they're going to move him back to right guard?
Well, what are they going to do? Bench Ali Marpet, a potential Pro Bowler at right guard?
What happens with Sweezy?
We'll see. He's going to have to scramble. But I'm telling you right now, Marpet's not going to be the odd man out. If it doesn't work out at center, doesn't mean you're going to bench Ali Marpet. That would be absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think Izbits would jump on me for that one. But we'll see.
To me, the key element here isn't so much Marpet. Granted, there's going to be a learning curve. Sweezy's even talked about it. Marpet's talked. Everybody's admitted there's going to be learning. How could there not be? I think Sweezy is the key, not so much Marpet, because, you know, they're again that back issue. That's why in the cut that I asked Cutter directly, you know, when did you become comfortable that Sweezy was going to be able to return? And, you know, if you bank on a guy being a starter, your hope is 16 games. So, and he really never directly answered that. He just talked about, well, we projected Marpet as a center. And, you know, I've said this over and over, and fans are tired of hearing it, so I won't mention again about, you know, Marpet was projected as a center when he was drafted. But the guy who picked him is a former offensive lineman for Tom Osborne. He knows a little bit about offensive line. So I'm comfortable in that. A guy who has offensive line experience, granted not the NFL, but in one of the more celebrated offensive line programs of the 20th century was Nebraska. I'm comfortable with a guy like that thought that Marpet could play center. I'm comfortable with that. I'm more concerned about Sweezy in his back.
Yeah, it's interesting. Cutter said he wasn't sure when he knew about Sweezy's availability to take over, but Sweezy was on IR last year, so it would be interesting to know, did he know this sort of in late November? We will never know, or Cutter isn't telling us, or who knows where it fits in there. Two things really I have a question with. One, if Joe Hawley is getting mauled at 270 something pounds, then why is he in there? Why was he there? And then why was his backup Evan Smith returning to the team? Something's a little odd there,
I can tell you.
A little bit odd. Now, I get that Hawley did some things well, but he's the guy who was getting gutted up the gut. And the one, he's back, and I understand Cutter loves him, but why didn't Evan Smith play more center last year? Seems a little bit odd to me.
Smith, I think, is seen as the primary backup at guard, and a pretty good one, because he has filled in at guard. And that leads me to a bigger point, Steve. You know, let's not forget what Cutter said. One team in the league, the team that happened to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, and it's no coincidence, when you got that kind of continuity, one team in this league started all five offensive linemen for 16 games. So I don't think that's a reach by Cutter. Things are going to happen. Lee, it's a very fluid situation. It's a five-man unit. Mm-hmm. To expect all five guys to stay healthy, that's pie in the sky.
Yes,
doesn't
yes.
happen. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen is, you know, Marpet's going to miss a couple of games. Pamphile, Dotson. There's going to be mixes and matches. They think they've got some depth. Now, there's one guy that you haven't mentioned yet And my information is that they are high on this guy. We haven't seen him, but they like what they see. That's Caleb Benenach. They drafted him. He wasn't a high draft pick, but they think they can develop this kid, and they think they got a lot to work with. So throw him in the mix, and they think they've got some depth up front. My point is Marpet's going to be the center until he proves that he can't be. And if he proves that he can't be, and that's the worst-case scenario, he falls back into his right guard spot, and then we'll see what happens with Sweezy and Panfil. I'll say it again. I'll say it to my dying breath. Ali Marpet is not going to be benched, period.
There we go. You heard it from the custodian of Canton. Ira, it's interesting about Benenach. I had never heard anything bad about him, but when he has played, he really hasn't embarrassed himself. So you got some good information there. But here's one, you know, Steve was asking about Hawley. You know, why was he in there? I can tell you right now. Dirk Koetter is almost loyal to a fault. He's a very, very loyal guy. Look at the running backs they brought in last year, or just the players they brought in last year off the street. All of them had connections to Koetter in some way. You could argue there were better running backs on the street than Antoine Smith, but you know him and Koetter had a relationship. He brought him in. Hawley had a relationship, brought him in when DeMar Dotson got hurt. Wasn't that when they brought Hawley in? No, that's Gossett Sherrills. I'm sorry.
Quiz Rogers.
Well, yes, Quiz Rogers, very much so. And obviously, you know this better than anyone, Ira, because you had the information long before anyone about Mike Smith being the defensive coordinator. Obviously, he's got a long, long relationship with Mike Smith.
Coach. It's called a comfort level, Lee. Comfort.
Comfort and loyalty. Koetter's a loyal kind of guy. And so that's why Hawley was in there. You know, he's a Koetter guy.
Yeah, it extends to Cecil Shorts as well. Jaquiz Cecil Rogers Shorts, keeps on going. I mean, there were several names.
And Steve, to be perfectly blunt, they felt Hawley was a better center than Evan Smith. I mean, it's as simple as
that. Well, Hawley's first year, he sure was better than Smith.
They just thought he was better than Smith.
Yeah, I'm just keeping it very black and white here. Coach says Hawley, essentially saying Hawley was getting mauled up the gut. He played an awful lot for a guy who was getting mauled. Doesn't say a lot for the backup. The loyalty's an element there, and there are a lot of elements, but it's interesting.
And like Steve said about Hawley, just because he was better than Evan Smith doesn't mean he was good. Two different elements there. Might have been better than Evan Smith, the center. Doesn't mean he was a good center.
Jason, nobody's rooting harder for Sweezy's back to hold up than Jason Knight.
or the Glazer family.
He's a big key, Sweezy. We don't know what he can do, but he comes highly touted from Seattle. And, Steve, am I wrong that Seattle had a reputation for physicality up front on both sides.
All right, enough.
Ball.
I'm dialing you back here. I'm dialing you back. First, we flushed out the whole Sweezy Marpet back and forth. You're wondering if I was questioning you. You stated previously a couple of weeks ago, Marpet is not going to sit no matter what.
I'm sticking with it.
I agree with you. You forgot. I agree with you. Marpet's not going to be on the bench wondering what happened to his career. It's not going to happen, and it would be stupid. Yeah, frankly, it would be stupid, and I find it hard to believe that J.R. Sweezy is going to come back and be so incredibly better than Ali Marpet at right guard. Sweezy wasn't that great in Seattle. I mean, he wasn't making Pro Bowls in Seattle, and in that kind of conversation, doesn't mean he won't be a good player, but Marpet's not going to be the odd man out. It wouldn't make any sense.
In other words, you are on record saying you agree with the sage.
I agree with the sage. And as far as Benenach goes, Benenach had one crap game last year, one good one. That's really all we know.
What more do you expect from a young player?
George Warhop, I wrote about it on JoeBucksFan.com. George Warhop got on the air on Buccaneers Radio Network and said, basically laughed about how bad Benenach was in his first game. Didn't hold back any words, but said, wow, this kid bounced back. And he got the holy crap first game jitters out of the way. In game two, he was good. So, I mean, they should be hopeful there. If one thing we know about Warhop, and combine that with what Lee said about Jason Light and being an ex-offensive lineman, and knowing how to what to sense in these guys, the Donald Penn and the Jeremy Zuda kick out notwithstanding, and your buddy Anthony Collins, Ira, your favorite Buccaneer of all time, they know how to develop.
And they're not afraid to play young players, Steve.
And they know how to develop these own linemen and get them ready. So that's exciting right there. Now, moving on to Dirk Koetter, Ira, you asked him about his administrative time, you know, because Cutter's been looking at ever since the season. He's talked almost, I'm not going to say bitched, but almost bitched about time management being so tough. And he's even said a few things like, oh, if I didn't have to meet with you media guys so much, and which I think is great.
Only half joking.
Maybe only one third joking.
There you go.
You know, what stood out to me was he said the organization, which means the Glazers, have allowed me to bring in a couple of extra guys. Couple of extra guys to for quality control to give him more time. What do you make of that, Team Glazer, and the whole spiel there?
Well, it shows that Cutter's got a little bit of clout earned after a 9-7 season, Lee.
Is that the word for the day, clout?
Clout. Lee, if he goes 4-12 as a first-year head coach and he asks for more help, maybe the Glazers say, we'll see about that. Go win some football games. So he's got a little street cred. Mm-hmm. He's got some street cred, which always helps. I thought it was interesting that I asked about hands-on coaching. He says it's not so much the hands-on coaching that is at risk now that he's a head coach. It's being in the room with the quarterbacks when they're breaking down film. He's very – I think he missed it. Mm-hmm. I think he missed it badly. And I think in his heart, he feels that it affected Winston's progress in a little ways. Yes, Winston made progress. Maybe he would have made a little more progress if, you know, Cutter's right there to break down film with them and to make pointed remarks, because the three of us, I think, are in agreement. One of the things we really like about Cutter, he doesn't coddle Jameis Winston. He doesn't coddle him. Where a lot of coaches know, hey, this is the franchise. Don't mess with
my meal ticket.
Don't get on the wrong side of him. I don't think Cutter ever thinks about that.
No.
And I like that about Cutter.
And I think Cutter also believes that would be irresponsible of him as a coach if you let Jameis walk all over him. Now, about your Cutter element, about how he misses being in the room, I think you're on to something. I believe it was after the Rams game. Let's flash back, post game.
That infamous Rams game, Lee?
I believe it was after that game where I even asked Dirk, because Jameis had an awful game. And I asked Dirk, has Jameis regressed? He said no. But in that same press conference, Cutter muttered out loud, I don't think he meant this for public consumption. He meant to mumble it under his breath, but it didn't get his microphone in front of his face. Like I got one right now. So if I could say some unchoice words, it would go out. His bits wouldn't edit it. But anyway, Cutter, I heard him distinctly say it, I thought we were past this. So that goes to your point.
That's the kind of honesty that Isbitz salutes from a head coach.
Why do we keep referencing me? What is going on?
You're always in the middle of these things.
Of course I salute the damn head coach. He's candid. And forget that he even sat down with us. He's candid. What more could you ask for after Lovie Smith playing charades and Greg Schiano overthinking everything so he can figure out how not to lie but not help anybody with a real answer?
Pasta.
Hey, guys, I've asked Cutter several times, and you guys have been there I've asked him several times since he got the head coach job about this administrative duties. Yeah. And the reason I ask that is, yeah, he's got a lot of experience in the league as a coordinator. Mm-hmm. And he was a head coach in college at two different colleges. But always in the back of my mind when I was pressing Cutter on this is there's things that you really don't know about that head coach job until you get in there and sit behind that desk. And, yeah, he talked to Mike Smith about what he can expect. But remember, Lee, when you're the man instead of, you know, the man behind the man, everything goes through your desk. I mean, little crazy stuff. What time you want the bus to leave, things you wouldn't even think about. And
guys blowing off practice.
Yeah, they're all coming in and they're asking you. You are the guy.
You're like a fifth grade teacher.
And, Steve, after a while, that wears you down because you want to get back to coaching and getting in that room. So that's why I've been on Cutter so much about these administrative things, because it's part and parcel of being a head coach comes with the territory.
Coach, I don't know if I can show up to practice on time. I've got a runny nose.
So no more bus questions? That's going to fix the Bucs offense?
Only bus question is when Seferian Jenkins missed it in New Orleans. And we were the first to report it, Roy and I.
Recount that.
Just Cummings and I coming out, you know, after a night on the town in the Crescent City. And here it is Sunday morning. And, you know, the game starts at 12 o'clock New Orleans time. Mm-hmm. Roy and I leave, you know, 9:30. We're going down Poydras Street, down in the Dome. Yeah. We're jumping in a cab. And, Steve, we jump in that cab. I look out the back window, and the Buck buses have all left. The very last bus is gone. And who should burst out of those lobby doors and stand on the porch over there? But, you know, a little Austin Seferian Jenkins.
On a stoop.
And I said to Cummings, hey, look, he missed the bus. Roy goes, you got to be kidding me. Sure enough, after the game, I talked to him in the locker room. And he goes, I might have overslept a little bit.
Nice.
I'm not saying that's the reason Seferian Jenkins isn't here. But it didn't help his case.
All right, you scared me earlier, Ira, when you said you're revealing what's in the back.
He's taking notes again, looking at it.
Again with the notes.
I go everywhere with a page of notes.
So what are you, Stephen Hawking?
I'm like,
stop with the notes.
Stephen Hawking can't take notes. He's like Perry Mason. He's like a defense lawyer at court.
I'm like Dirk Cutter. He just told us he puts notes in his journal on his desk.
And okay? I said that somebody leaked his journal to me. You got Stephen all excited. Hawking.
Stephen Hawking has to hire someone to take notes for him.
All right, what's your question?
So you're about to share the back of your mind. When you're asking questions, that was scary, but it's good for the listeners to understand how a great sage like yourself
in context, Steve.
How a sage like yourself thinks. But Ira, you read between the lines big time. I could hear Dirk Cutter listening to this flinching in his car.
He's in Pocatello. What do you mean he's listening?
They have computers in Pocatello. You projected that he wants more meeting time. He wants more time in that quarterback room, Ira. I wrote down because
he said it. What projecting?
Just let me finish. Come on.
No, I'm not used to you finishing.
You said that you projected. He said that because it affected Jameis. That he believes that less time with Jameis in that meeting room had an effect. Are you going all in on that? That you believe that's why Cutter wants more time because he wasn't satisfied with the result?
I didn't say he wasn't satisfied with the result, but I think he feels the more he can participate, the better it is going to be for his franchise quarterback. What's wrong with thinking about that way, Steven? You have a problem with that?
I'm just clarifying. That's a big leap. I mean, the coach has a lot of different things he could put more attention to. You know, the kicker room.
Sure, but he's a quarterback.
Is there a bigger priority than getting Jameis to continue to elevate his game? Is there more of a priority?
No more priority, but Cutter's a quarterback guy. He's an offensive coordinator. He's a quarterback guy. The only reason Cutter is even head coach is because of how he helped develop Jameis. So obviously there's a connection, there's a relationship there. Cutter knows that's his meal ticket. Like, if for whatever reason,
leave Winston to Kemper to put it in language that you can understand.
If Winston regresses, that's all on Cutter. And on Monken, it's on Cutter.
That is why Dirk Cutter is sitting in his office.
I didn't
say relationship with Jameis.
Jameis is his job security.
I didn't say I disagreed with you, Ira. I just wanted to clarify. That's a bold statement.
Consider yourself clarified.
Bold statement.
Look, you're Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter. You are the premier sage of all Buccaneers media. It's important. Your words are important, Ira.
And now I got fans piping in that I should get John Lynch, Rondé Barber, and Simeon Rice all in Canton. You know, one at a time, gentlemen. One at a time, Lee. I'm 0-4 with Lynch. He's my priority right now.
What, people are upset you're not even lobbying for Keyshawn Johnson?
They're saying, get it done, Kaufman, get it done. You know, who's next on the list? You know, Dexter Jackson?
You didn't like my one-liner, Keyshawn?
Keyshawn's mind, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, in his mind.
He is.
So why is Cutter laughing at me so much when I said I had to get in the gym this summer? The guy breaks into hysterics.
Don't take it personal, Steve.
It wasn't that funny.
He's
it wasn't
just pulling your chain
hard.
A little bit.
Yeah, he was pulling my chain a little bit. So that's our segment for today on Dirk Cutter specifically. We've got more from Dirk coming up next week and the week after. A lot of good stuff. Again, we spent a lot of time with Dirk. Happy to share.
It's going
to
get us through the training camp, Steve. Absolutely.
It's just another thing on the Bucks buffet at JoeBucksFan.com. That's the bottom line, our endless buffet. We're kind of like when you go to a Golden Corral with your lovely wife and go to that chocolate fountain with your bowl of strawberries. And you know, it just keeps on flowing.
Hey, I got a quick topic. It's not on your sheet, Steve. May I interject if it's not on your sheet?
Well, I didn't get to number 4B
right,
yet,
on.
But go ahead.
Hold on. We pull that over to the next podcast. But did you guys have any problem? Now, everybody loves rankings. Everybody loves polls.
Yeah.
And I guess it was Football Outsiders, which I'm not that familiar with. But, Steve,
okay.
they ranked the Bucs 2002 defense as the number 2 defense of the last 30 years. I like the ranking, but I wouldn't have picked the 91 Eagles.
That was
interesting. Number 1. I guess Bob Golic is doing cartwheels. And by the way, and along the lines of an Ian Beckles. This is along the line of an Ian Beckles.
He didn't play defense in that team.
People that, you know, that were not in Tampa in the 90s that listened to Ian Beckles on radio think that this guy was a five-time All-Pro guard. He was an okay player on a bad football team. Bob Golic, I don't even know if he was an okay player. Nothing special. But to hear him talk, you know, on Mike and Mike, I'm right in the thick of that defense with Jerome Brown and the boys over there. And you know, I don't want to hear it.
Let me get this straight. Going off on Bob Golic, who I thought was a Browns player. You're talking about Mike Golic?
I'm talking about Mike
Golic. Okay,
you're
okay.
Right. It's just like Jason and Justin Pulowski. It's the same thing. I mix these things up.
Well, I was going to say the Bob Golic's greatest contribution to society was he played a teacher on Saved by the Bell Part 2 college years or whatever.
There you go. Now, Steve, here's all I want to say about the 2002 Bucks, other than the fact that we all thought it was spectacular. that they had that kind of a season on that glorious day in San Diego when the Tampa Trib sent 25 people, 25 staffers
Did they really?
To San Diego, yes. And I've got a tremendous story. I might tell it on the next podcast, Steve. While you're writing a million things down and doing tic-tac-toe on your sheet, why don't you write down Kaufman's story about the Super Bowl promises?
You've now spent 2.5 minutes getting to what you're going to tell
us
about
the 2002.
The tic-tac-toe line.
Here's what I'm
going to
say. I have been covering the NFL since 1979 with the New York Giants, who had a rookie coach named Ray Perkins and a rookie quarterback named Phil Simms. That was before Perkins left for Alabama. Mm-hmm. That's a long time ago. That's 38 years by my calculation. I have never seen a better pass defense since that time than the 02 Bucks. That team wanted you to throw the ball. Mm-hmm. They were that good mm-hmm. against the pass, and they were pretty good against the run. Not great and not bad. Mm-hmm. They weren't getting gashed yeah. by the run. That was a tremendous pass defense team, and if the Bucks can get halfway to that quest in 2017, they're going to go a long way towards getting where they want to go.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, you're right. I'm not arguing with you.
Look what they did to Gannon. I know they knew the plays or whatever, but Gannon was the MVP.
They wanted people to throw because Sapp or Rice were going to get to you, and if they didn't get to you, then you had to go through that gauntlet of Lynch.
What a ball-hawking defense. Holy that cow. Was, Steve. Fantastic.
Kelly, Brian Kelly.
Yeah, Brian Kelly was a solid player.
I'm almost going to find a way to disagree with you, Ira. Ooh. Believe it or not, Ooh. Because they are no chance are they that good against the pass if they're not good against the run. Because no defense stops third and fours and third and threes. They got you in third and long, and they ate you for lunch every time. I mean, they were very strong against the run as well, extremely. I mean, it wasn't known that way, but they were
Which goes against this theory that Simeon Rice was a loafer and a liability against the run. I think that's... I think that's far-fetched, Lee. I think it's a cheap shot.
At one time, I don't think it was a cheap shot, but Monty Kiffin wasn't going to tolerate, much less Sapp, wasn't going to tolerate a guy loafing half the place.
Absolutely.
Next year, Ira, when you're harassing Andy Reid again at the Pro Bowl, I think you should ask him about Simeon Rice. See what kind of answer you get, because you know what? He's not going to be in the finalists for the Hall of Fame. There'll be no pressure. You get a straight answer from Mr. Reid. Should be interesting.
I got two questions for you, Ira. Topical questions, especially this one. We're kind of leading into it because you mentioned Sapp and the great Bucks. Your thoughts on the recent news that Sapp is starting to have some memory loss?
Well, another sad case. Sapp obviously feels it's tied into his playing days. I don't want to be flippant, but at my age, which Steve's got me at 97, I can't remember names like I used to, so... it's not necessarily tied into his playing days, but based on what we know about CTE and other people mm-hmm. that have been proven to harken back to the hits that they took as a player, it's not outlandish for Sapp to feel that way, to feel that some of his mental issues are tied to his playing days.
Wait a minute, you can't remember names?
Well,
Muriel. He remembers Muriel.
Muriel, yeah, yeah.
Jason.
So it sounds like another sad chapter. Sapp's not saying he's a basket case. He's not. He's not Nick Buonaconte.
Yeah, that's
at this point, and that's sad. You know, and I watched that. Yeah, watched that video, and Sapp's serious. Mm-hmm. He's genuine.
Well, you know him better than most.
That. Yeah. You know, you have to wonder about the Derek Brooks of the world and Rondé Barber down the line. Rondé Barber didn't miss a game for 15 years. Brooks, 14 years in a Buck uniform. It takes a toll on everybody, Lee. And for Sapp to be out front about it, I think it's very refreshing for Sapp to talk about it.
I got one quick thing about Sapp and in relation to the CTE players, et cetera. You know, Sapp saying, you know, hey, I'm forgetting the grocery list. I have to thank God for my phone and notifications. And I'm like, I'd be lost without those freaking notifications on the phone. I'm not that much older than him. So, but again, I don't mean to be flippant about that. But, you know, you always hear about all these players coming down with these head issues. Roger Staubach, there's a guy who had to retire because he had, what, 8, 9, 10 concussions? Son of a gun, one of the smartest guys around.
Sharp as a tack.
Still sharp as a tack. Was he not a billionaire? He turned himself to a billionaire in real estate. And then you got Mike Curtis, prominent lawyer.
Yeah, yeah.
Then again, Nick Buonaconte was a prominent lawyer, and boom, look what happened to him. So, but it's interesting, some guys who really had, like Mike Curtis and Roger Staubach, thus far, they're in their 70s, and you don't hear anything. And I saw an interview with Roger Staubach. And what's going on with a lot of players, that's what drove him out of the game. He was scared he was going to wind up like that.
But, Steve, the evidence is out there that it's a high-risk profession, and I think players have to know that going in.
I'm going to say one thing that's interesting and another thing that you're really not going to like, and you might be upset that this ends up on your podcast, Ira, since you're a man of high morals and ethics and – and you enjoy a good sandwich as well. Now, first, let me say, Rondé Barber told me in the Bucks locker room, and very late in his career, I want to say his last year might have been his second to last year, he never had a concussion. Never.
That he knows of.
I'm just saying what he said. I never had a concussion, and he talked a little bit about it, and, you know, it's not like it's a crime to say I had a few through my career. So that was fascinating, and that could even, I bet if somebody maybe put in a study on Rondé Barber hearing that, on how he tackled and how
part of that could be his tackling.
Part of that could be technique, so that's very interesting. But I want to say this about Sapp, because I can't help myself, and maybe I'm just an a-hole, which is a word that's okay for this podcast, but Warren Sapp, the timing of this announcement, Ira, when it comes down from the NFL that they've just paid out concussion lawsuits, that this guy got money, that guy got money, that money's flush. We know Sapp has had a rough financial situation. The timing, the time of year when Sapp would get the biggest play out of this, combined with the concussion settlement, combined with the fact that he's probably aching to get a shot to be an analyst again after being unemployed for a couple years. I hate to say it, but it
hits you wrong, doesn't it?
It hits me like, you know what? Warren Sapp, everybody deserves the benefit of the doubt on their personal injuries and their health, but you know what? It wouldn't shock me at all if this is some sort of calculated ploy to become a more sympathetic figure, which could help Sapp in down the line.
Steve, in one sense, I understand a cynical approach to this. Lee, I tend to think the best of people. I'm not knocking Isbit's interpretation, and he's not saying that's necessarily the case. He's just throwing it out there. Maybe Sapp invites that upon himself, Lee, with his past behavior. Maybe not. But it looked like he was speaking from the heart. But I understand what Steve was saying.
The thing that got me when he said he forgot how to drive to one of his friend's houses. Like, whoa. Jeez. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been to Charleston, Illinois in 25 years where I went to college. I could drive all over that place right now. That hit home when he said that.
At least he knows how to drive, which, you know, leads me to Steve Isbit's on the streets of Phoenix again.
You and him and his driving.
We were there for 3 days, and I came back with three months worth of stories.
Did you terrorize the guy this bad? Did he fly off a car window onto a cactus?
I should have rented that car and kept him away from the counter.
I've driven with Isbit's. I mean, is he aggressive? Sure. I mean, is he like a NASCAR 500 driver? No.
There were no near accidents. No near anything. It's funny because I given Steve Dumig a few rides, you know, since he had his cancer issues. And I asked him before we got in the car, I said, have you ever listened to the Ira Kaufman podcast? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, about driving. And he's like, no, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, good. Good. Never mind.
you must have done something because this guy's been spooked how many months later? He's still bringing it up.
Lee, these affluent people on Camelback Road, they're not used to a Jersey driver. It's just the way it is.
What, their chauffeurs aren't? Is that what you're saying?
He got us there in time. I'll say that. Every time he got us there in time.
He got you there in one piece, and he was punctual. That's all you need to know.
Absolutely.
All right, Ira. Yeah, the Sapp thing, CTE, concussions, head injuries, they're serious. Linemen are getting concussed almost by definition on every single play.
Yeah.
It's serious stuff. Watching and reading the Sapp stuff, maybe I missed something, but I didn't see anything about him talking about I've been to X doctors and I've been diagnosed with this and that. Just to talk about memory loss, I mean, you know, get older, you forget stuff, and it doesn't. I'm not discounting it, but I don't know.
Understood, Steve.
All right, Kaufman, your next podcast, of course, fires Thursday, and everyone, when you enjoy this podcast on iTunes, especially, leave a review, leave a comment. We love to get the feedback, positive, negative, whatever. Remember, August 5th, training camp takeover day. You're going to get a lot more information on that. Just going to be a great time, a lot of fun. All you got to do is show up and love the Bucks
on Thursday's podcast, Steve. I promise our listeners that they will hear a Super Bowl story from San Diego and the Tampa Tribune and yours truly that they will never forget. That's all I'm going to say.
You're unbelievable, Ira. Get out of here.